all those great offers at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. The websites are edmorriscadillactampa.com, edmorriscadillacbrandon.com.
Hold on. I want to stop you right here, and I think it's worth noting. The Tampa dealership, this is worth mentioning. Brian is the general manager. He's been there 8 years. Each of the last 2 years, that dealership has been honored by the Cadillac company in general, the overseer, as one of the top 20 dealerships in the world. And I didn't say United States. I said the world. 920 dealerships, that's about 2%. That is very impressive. 2% among all dealerships get that designation. That guy got it 2 years in a row. Brian, you're doing something right over there. Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Fletcher Avenue, a little west of 275.
All right, the Ira Kaufman podcast is back. The sage of Tampa Bay sports is still alive in July, in case you were worried. The podcast is presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. We heard that rousing endorsement to open the podcast, Ira, of Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa. We'll talk about Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon later. How are you, Sage? You look good. And we are all here, in case anyone was wondering, Man Beast intern Zach Seifter patrolling the streets, talking to Buccaneers. Lee DeCamper, the other Joe. I'm the other Joe. It was two other Joes. I'm Steve Isbitz. How are you, Sage?
Doing well. We're at Buffalo Wild Wings, Lee, in Trinity, where I believe it needs to be mentioned that I'm having a salad with a lemon vinaigrette.
Lemon
vinaigrette. I'm trying. I'm drinking water over here.
Why do you use the word limp?
The pounds are flying off, Lee. They're flying off.
But I also see bread there, too. That's not good.
I was going to ignore it, and I've already chomped down half of it. Three more weeks, gentlemen. Three more weeks. It was going to fly by before the start of Rookies Report in about 3 weeks. And I think it's worth noting, Lee, that you see this beautiful shirt I'm wearing?
Yes.
It comes courtesy of Todd Wright. He gave it to me when we played golf in that charity tournament. Then he did a podcast with a classic line by Wright. I got to say, Ira's bad, but he's not as bad as I thought he was going to be. I mean, that's classic Todd Wright.
You know, I just noticed the logo on your right sleeve, the Todd Wright Tour.
And I'm also taking golf lessons, so be careful, anybody that's driving by Hillsborough Avenue in Oldsmar tomorrow, because I'll be taking my second lesson. And this is set up by a guy that Todd Wright said is one of the best instructors in Tampa Bay. Joey DePompo. Doesn't that sound like a Rodney Dangerfield guy that, you know, that's his lawyer or something?
Well, I thought this is the guy you go to for some, get money fronted to you. The bank turns you down.
And he's not a character out of Goodfellas, so don't get that smile out of your face.
I don't know if we can talk about it or not, but allegedly, very soon, you're going to be swinging something else.
Well,
on the 4th of July.
That needs clarification immediately over here. I'll let Steve handle that.
All right, let me set the stage here. Of course, the Todd Wright Toddcast is at joebucksfan.com and the various podcast platforms. And Todd runs the golf tour associated with joebucksfan.com. And Ira is learning the game. Joey DePompo has been around a long time, Ira. You're in excellent hands.
Joey!
There. Now, July 4th. Thursday night. This is really unique, Ira, and I can't wait to see where this goes.
I'm in training for this already.
Thursday, you will be at Steinbrenner Field, Tampa Tarpons game. Used to be the Tampa Yankees, the single-A game. Now they have that amazing fireworks show after their July 4th game.
Martin Luther King and Dale Mabry, right, Steve? Right on.
You
the
got
corner.
It, right across from the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, the big one. You will be taking batting practice with the Yankees. From 4:30 to 5:30, the real Yankees. You will be up there swinging the sticks with the helmet on. And
wait. Now I'm nervous. I thought DeCamper was going to pitch to me, and I thought I might be able to hit a few balls. Now you're telling me I got to face like a 92-mile-an-hour fastball, Lee? That's going to be trouble.
So you will be there, and after batting practice at 5:30, you and your lovely wife will be enjoying the Spectrum Dugout Club. All-inclusive food, drink, VIP experience. Now, anybody who wants to do this with you, there are a few opportunities, not a lot, it's very limited. For $42, they can go out, take batting practice a little bit with the Yankees, and hang out with you in this giant VIP experience, watch the game, and they get a free hat.
And fireworks at the
end. The big fireworks show. So anybody who wants to do that can go check out the Tampa Tarpons website and hang out with the Sage, and we TarpinsBaseball.com. We can't wait to see if you hit the ball out.
Lee, any chance I can touch off some pregame fireworks by hitting the ball maybe 110 feet? Is it possible, Lee? Can I get it over the shortstop's head, Lee?
Get it out of the infield. That's the goal, right?
I can already see you choking up and slapping one to right field.
You know, our man Beast intern said, Ira, if they pull the shift on you, you can bunt for a double. So, you know, he's got it going already.
All right, Sage. Now, also on the business side here, Tampa 2, your show with Derek Brooks on the Identity Tampa Bay continues all through this month. So we're very excited about that. All right, Sage, here we go. Now, I got to ask you this, because you are a man of the people, Ira. And today, as we record this on Monday on JoeBucksFan.com, I threw up a poll, and it's only been up there for 3 hours.
3 hours.
3 hours, Ira. Just under 1,000 folks have weighed in.
That's strong. 1,000 people in 3 hours? Man, you can't get that if you put a referendum up in Newport Richey for something.
This is July 1st, not the middle of the season.
Well, unfortunately, most people don't like to participate in the polls, but we love the 1,000 who do. And the question is simple, Ira. How many wins will the Bucks have during the 2019 regular season? And what is the number one response, Ira?
All right. I have not seen the poll. 1,000 responses. I'm going to say the majority of those nine.
Nine is the number one response. But
Lee, give me the bump. Give me the bump.
It only gets 22.5%.
But it's more than any other.
More than any other. Now, at number two is 8 wins, 21%. Number three is what, Ira?
Number three is 10 wins.
Number three is 7 wins at 16.5%. And number four is 10 or more wins at 15%. And it goes from there. So let's put it this way. Most Bucks fans, we're going to do my quick math here. 44, 54, 60% are looking at 8 or more wins this season. Your thoughts?
Well, it goes back to what we did on our previous podcast, Lee, last week. I believe the question to us was, what would be a successful season for the Bucks? I said 9. I think you went along with me, and here comes Isbit saying 7 and 9. We ripped him a new one, as he deserved it. Just like Chris Sims deserves a new one for those stupid quarterback rankings. We'll get to that in a future podcast. Look, Steve, if you're not going to be optimistic about the Bucks on July 1st, when the hell are you going to be optimistic? Mm-hmm. These fans tend to think positive. There's nothing wrong with it. I think 9 wins is the minimum for what you need to be dubbed a successful season. To me, 88 is mediocre. We've had, you know, what's mediocre? It's an improvement, but it's not successful. 9 and 7, you got a shot at making the playoffs. Buffalo Bills did it a couple of years ago. They made the playoffs. Sometimes you do, sometimes you go 10 and 6. Just ask the 2010 Bucks, and you don't make the playoffs. But you give yourself a chance. And we all remember in 2016, it was pretty darn exciting around here when they were 8 and 5 and in charge of their own destiny. Played some big games in December, Lee, against the Cowboys and the Saints. Came up a little short, but still finished 9 and 7. That was a heck of a year for Dirk Cutter's first season.
It looked like this team had turned the corner and then poof.
Then, of course, the next year, Steve says to me in the summer of 2017, how many games the Bucks going to win? I said 10.
Yeah.
I said 10 because, you know, everything looked good on the up and up, and it all fell apart.
Yeah.
And it has not been put together since.
No.
Lee, does this surprise you? 9-8, or leading the pack with the Buccaneers fans?
Yeah, it does. It really does. It very much surprises me. I think that's the faith they have in Bruce Arians. What else could it be?
That's a good point, Lee.
What else could it be? It can't be the defense.
Yeah.
Can't be the running attack. Can't be the pass rush with JPP. You know, I'm not going to bet that
it's
the guy's
going to... It's not Deion Buchanan. Yeah, you know. Let's put it like that.
I think we all know that there's a large segment of Bucks fans that just despised McCoy, thought he was a fraud, thought he dragged down a team. The fact that he's no longer on the roster, could that, I hate to say it because it's a sad statement, could that have energized some fans?
I think it could be a factor of, I wouldn't say a majority of the fans, Steve, but some. And there were, you know what, the McCoy skeptics, we don't know how many they were, but they were loud, and they made their feelings well known on this site and in this podcast. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have two interesting thoughts, and I want Zach's chomping at the bit here, a lifelong Bucks fan that he is, to weigh in. I want to get his opinion on the fans' thoughts. But, Ira, a couple of interesting thoughts here. As we sit here, we are the conglomerate of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee and you have been very clear that if you had to pick a win total right now, maybe the last few weeks we talked about it, you guys are looking at six tops right now in your minds. Now, that could change. It's all fluid.
It
we
could,
have to see the team.
Because this roster's going to change.
Right. Yeah. But you guys are at six tops. I said I'd bet seven is what I said if I had to pick right now. And most fans don't agree with us, yet they read the website on. And I find that fascinating that a good percentage of the fans thinks we're way off base.
Well, fans are fans. That's why they're called fans. Mm-hmm. They think that we're too negative. They think we're Debbie Downers. But as you pointed out many times on this podcast, we'll give our frank opinions. We're not paid by the Bucks, and they're coming off two straight 5-11s. And so, you know, the facts are the facts.
Coaching change, which some people believe the quarterback situation is in flux, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, Zach, what do you think of the fans and their response, their big optimism here? I won't call it big, but the majority, the biggest answer is 9 wins.
I can't say that as a fellow fan, I find it entirely surprising. As a fan, you want to be optimistic. You want to think that the best is to come. But after 11 years of not making the playoffs, I can say that I'm not necessarily in that boat. Where I say 8, 9, 10 wins, I'm sort of in a prove it, show me that you can do it kind of mode. I wouldn't necessarily say 8, 9 wins is where my mindset is at, but I'm not surprised by it.
Maybe I'm not reading the fans right, and maybe I'm reading too much of the comments on JoeBucksFan.com. But Mike Tanner of Bleacher Report is doing a column on the fan bases for every NFL team. And he Twittered Steve and I Friday. He's like, hey, you know, help me out. You know, give me what's the pulse? And I said, you know, it appears to be gloom and doom. This fan base has been beaten down with a decade of mostly losing. And they're like, you know, what else can go wrong? You know, it's almost like a show me. Show us. Okay, you got Arians, that's great. And he loved the analogy I made that Arians, in some people's view, Arians being hired would be sort of like hiring Admiral Chester Nimitz to run the SS Minnow. You know, you have a fantastic captain, but it's still the SS Minnow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong.
I'm kind of glad, guys, that the number one win total to this point out of 1,000 replies is 9. I kind of like that. I don't want it to be 5 or 6. But you know, Lee, nobody's picking 13-3 either. So
no,
it's not like
crazy.
These fans are crazy. 9-7 is not out of this world.
Now you got the reference to the SS Minnow, didn't you?
I did.
Okay, I don't think Zach did.
Gilligan?
Gilligan's Island.
He's never seen Gilligan's Island.
Never seen the show though.
The reference Ginger or Marianne?
Nope.
Oh. Doesn't know it.
That's why they call red haired chicks Ginger.
Doesn't know it.
Now that's a sandwich, isn't it? Ginger and Marianne.
Steve, you better pick up on this podcast. You know, elevate us to a higher plane over here, Steve.
All right, Sage. Now, Zach has been pulling some Kevin O'Donnell from Fox 13 duty this week.
Unbelievable.
And what that means is he's been chasing down Buccaneers on their own time. And, of course, these guys are back out training here and there at Skyway Park and some other local facilities.
This is a warning to Buck players. If you're practicing in the Bay Area, Zach will find you, Steve.
Now, I bring this up because O'Donnell did a little report last week on television. And basically,
he loves to go out there, doesn't he, Steve?
Basically put it out there that a lot of Bucks are holding their own training camp, and they're not resting up. They love training in the heat. Ali Marpet was on record saying the irony was fantastic. I was so glad somebody in our comments section brought it up because it was the first thing I thought of when Marpet said it. He was telling O'Donnell that I love to train in the summer. You know, really, my off time is January and February. That's when they play the damn playoffs. But anyway.
What the hell's Marpet doing out there? He's got to be running laps or something.
He's breaking his ass there.
What's he doing? Is he snapping the ball? I mean, is he trying to box somebody?
I didn't get a chance to see him on the field. I saw him in the weight room, though.
Oh, you saw him in the weight room?
Yeah, so he's doing his thing in there.
They got a weight room over there?
Yeah.
Damn.
So they're grinding away, and a lot of these guys believe in training hard in the heat in the summer before training camp. How do you feel about this, Ira? And what did guys do back in the day? Probably, you know, fans remember the Bucks were good. And do you recall hearing stories of these guys being out there June, July, killing themselves leading up to training camp?
I think, Steve, the operative phrase is to each his own. If Ali Marpet wants to come into camp in shape already. In the old days, people used to get in shape after they came into training camp. And it was understood. It was kind of understood. There's been a big change in that regard. Lee, when you report, that first day that you report, they want you in football shape.
Yeah.
Because the pads are coming on in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a big change. So I'm not going to piss on Ali Marpet if he wants to go out to and hang out with our intern.
Last time we learned you pissed on your wife, or you wanted to.
Well, that's what you said. You mean with the jellyfish thing?
With the jellyfish thing. You like to use that phrase a lot.
I've never seen you
laugh that hard, Steve.
We're not leading you down a negative road here. Ira, continue.
That was St. Pete Beach. It was a whole different kind of situation there, Lee. We're not into that kind of stuff.
You're having a rough time at St. Pete Beach. Hoodlums steal your furniture.
Zach, get me out of this thing. You're good at it.
1-2 is the wrong word. Wrong choice of words, I should say.
Now, you and St. Pete Beach, Ira, you're doomed there.
I'm not showing up anymore because there'll be some fans over there with a video camera waiting for me to go pee in the bushes over there. I'm not going to do it.
So just a little fun. I don't want to spend too much time with it, but I told Zach, go ahead and talk to Carl Nassib, who's out there. And, you know, we all know.
Not exactly our number one destination spot in the locker room.
It's good experience to talk to a guy who doesn't really like talking to the media. So, Zach, your impressions of going up to Carl Nassib to ask a couple of questions.
Nassib was a good guy, but once I went to go interview, like, outside the interview, but once I went to go interview him, a lot of short answers. A lot of, like, yes, no. I probably should have threw a couple more open-ended questions at him, but short answers, a little sarcastic, but as a whole, not a bad guy when you're done talking to him.
There's a little sarcasm to him, at least.
Yeah.
I think there is.
Was it fair to say, Zach, that he didn't want to participate?
That was definitely the feeling.
There you go. All right,
that
Sage.
Sounds like NASA.
Now, we've got a lot.
Now, if he has a big year, Lee, if he gets 9 or 10 sacks, all of a sudden he might open up a little bit.
Well, you know what? There's a rabid Bucks fan I know. I need to call him back. He tried to call me over the weekend. I think he was irked about the news about Alex Kappa. Anyway, he goes, typical Bucks. They pick a guy up cheap off the scrap heap. He does anything good. He's going to be gone because they can't afford to keep him. His issue is, wouldn't you draft a freaking pass rusher, a decent one?
Steve, the NFL history, which is approaching 100 years, Lee, 100 years.
And you've
year.
Been there for every year.
We're there.
Year. This is a big
We're there, aren't we?
No, I did not do the leather helmets with Newt Rockne. Did not. Didn't see Don Hutson play. Zach just said, who? But the NFL's in its 100th season. And you know what? Over the years, Steve, you talk about a guy who's not blessed with tremendous talent in NASA. He doesn't run a 4.640. But I believe I've seen a lot of guys over the years, Lee, so have you. They kind of fall into 7 or 8 sacks because they got a good motor. And if you have a good motor and you finish, and that's one of the things that the offensive lineman, the new offensive lineman, was looking at film of the Bucks offensive line last year. He said they didn't finish most times. And that was his number one takeaway. These guys were in position and they didn't finish. Well, the same applies on defense. If you keep going, you can fall into some sacks. Because if you got JPP or Sue breaking the pocket down, and if you continue and don't give up on the play, Lee, and I think that's Nassib's forte.
Whenever I hear the word motor in relation to a defensive end, I immediately think Adrian Claiborne.
You know what? They used to say that about Claiborne.
No one ever says anything about his footwork, his handwork, this or that. It's always, he's got a motor.
Yeah. Well, Claiborne stayed in this league.
Yeah,
Zach.
To his credit, yeah, but, I mean, he's not a guy you build a defensive line around.
No, he's not.
I'll go ahead and say this. If Nassib gets... And am I mispronouncing it again?
That's perfect. Nassib.
Okay, Nassib. If he gets 10 sacks, I dare say the Bucks are in top 20 defense.
Very nicely.
Top 20, which is remarkable from what they were last year.
And it would make Jason Light's resume look a heck of a lot better.
Sage,
if that happens.
Would it? But back to what that fan told me he was upset about. If Nassib does anything, he's going to be gone.
Well, but he got him. He got him for nothing, and so you give him the credit if he does well.
Yeah, if he performs, he performs. But you never know. I mean, injuries could end up having him stay if he plays well and JPP's gone. Who knows? Sage, two things about Nassib, and I wanted it to lead into something Lee wrote about earlier this week. But the thing with Nassib, it's the good GMs who are able to figure out, is this a motor guy who can get seven sacks by pure hustle and that's his ceiling, or is he a motor guy with talent who might be able to get 12 or 13 in a great year? I don't know which guy Nassib is right now. And Adrian Claiborne, my favorite two fun facts with him. One, he's got a Super Bowl ring. Two, he was drafted before Cameron Jordan, and so goes the Buccaneers' experience.
Now, he also had six sacks in a game a couple of years ago.
Nassib?
Since the Dallas Cowboys.
Adrian Claiborne.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
but that was, Tyron Smith was out, and the backup left tackle got beat.
Well done, Zach. Well done. Well done. He got it. He got eaten up.
All right, Sage. Now, Lee wrote this up. Bill Polian was on SiriusXM NFL Radio, and he was talking about the NFC South, and he said Carl Nassib is a pass rusher only in a 3-4, meaning he can't play the run, we can assume. Maybe he plays outside linebacker. Polian continues, I'm not sure, but it would have to be on the strong side. Vita Vea is a nickel rusher, a great one. McCoy is gone. Sue comes in. Sue plays up and down. You don't know what you're getting week to week from him. Blah, blah, blah. He turns it on and off. And then he keeps going. I can't see Vea and Sue. If Vea is the nose tackle and Sue's the athletic tackle on the move, then who's on the other end? It's certainly not JPP. Bill Polian doesn't really like this Buccaneers defensive line if you really listen to him.
Well, it's funny you say that because I think Lee's going to agree with me. First of all, Lee DeKemper's making a hell of a living quoting Bill Polian. He seems like he's always asked about the Bucs, but I know he's asked about a lot of topics. And you zero in on what he says about what goes on in one Buc place. Lee, am I wrong to suggest Bill Polian's not a fan of the 2019 Bucs?
No.
He doesn't like this roster.
No.
He thinks there's a lot of holes. I'm not sure he's a Winston guy.
He's back and forth on Winston. Sometimes
he's
loves
He's very pointedly in his remarks about the Bucs.
And
you've done a very good job of bringing this stuff to light.
The most pointed thing, I'm not trying to distract you here, but the most pointed thing, he lashed, I mean, I'm not joking, lashed out at the Bucs being in salary cap hell. He called it unconscionable.
That is one strong word, guys.
He said a team hasn't been in the playoffs in 10 years that has to clear salary cap to sign a first-round draft pick is unconscionable.
Well, the guy's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He is. He built the Panthers. He built the Bills. And, of course, he built the Colts. And then he fizzled out because he tried to shove his son down their throats. But the guy is in the Hall of Fame, Lee. He's got credentials. He's got gravitas. I like that one. And Steve, he's no fan of the Bucs. I don't think he's a Jason Light guy necessarily. He's shredding the defensive line before they even get on a field. Shredding them.
Well, having heard what he said about the running backs and the salary cap situation, it really wasn't shredding. He was skeptical, certainly. But he shredded the salary cap issue. Doesn't like the Bucs running backs.
You know, let's not go crazy on this 3-4, Lee. I think you're with me on that. They're not going to be in a 3-4 80% of the time. That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's hybrids and they nickel package 70% of the time and maybe Nassib's in, you know, if it's 3rd and 8, I think Nassib will be on the field rather than Will Golston, in my opinion.
The money backer.
And where's Shaq, Shaq Barrett, where was he? Was he in all this mix? Look, this roster's going to change, Lee, and I'm sticking with that, and I think Buck fans have to realize the 53-man roster is far from finalized.
Can we fairly... When I say fairly, I mean, you know, not grasping at straws. Can we fairly judge this defensive line? Because, well, number one, we've never seen this defense yet. I mean, what Bowles may have run with the Jets, what he ran with the Cardinals, we don't know if that's what he's going to do.
And there's going to be heavy blitzing. There will be heavy blitzing.
That's what they say.
That's
we'll
what
see.
They say.
Pat Kerwin had a response to that. He goes, think you're going to put pressure on Drew Brees blitzing up the middle? Good luck.
The flip side is if you don't get there on the blitz, you're very vulnerable.
Which we saw quite a bit of the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But my thing is, outside of no one's got a history on this roster of rushing the passer. Well, Sue does a little bit, but, you know, what's he, like Polian said, what's he done lately? Up and down, you don't know.
I think it's a fair criticism.
Vea, outside of 6 games, 8 games, you don't really know. He looked good, but, you know, that was just a brief period.
I think a good season for Vea is 5 sacks.
Possibly.
It's a good season.
And, of course, the thing with JPP, and frankly, I'm not expecting much of anything from the guy. And that's just sad, his situation. So I don't know if we could fairly, outside of grasping straws, I don't know if we could fairly prognosticate
and
what's going to
happen. Golston's a negligible factor on the pass rush.
Nightmare Golston, because he gives quarterbacks nightmares.
Well, one thing that I think will be interesting coming up this week, actually, JPP in past years has done his own version of social media PSA announcement on the safety of fireworks and being safe around fireworks, and I expect him to do that again this year on July 4th. Of course, he blew three of his fingers off. We know the history, but I have a feeling that part of that update with his fireworks might include a little bit on his own health, and we could have something this week.
Every little
that.
Bit will help in terms of information.
Well, I had someone with the Bucks tell me, guy blew his hand off and came back to be a still dominant pass rusher, which is speaks volumes about the guy's inner spirit. And they're hoping somehow or another that inner spirit will get him over the hump with this fractured neck.
I don't question the man's toughness. This is an injury unlike anything he's dealt with before. Oh,
we're going to learn more about it pretty soon. Sage, now, I wanted to turn your attention, before we hit on something Lee wrote, to something that I dug up that I think is fascinating, and I really need your sage wisdom to guide me. Young Zach, it wants to know what you think as well. The NFL puts out these next-generation stats, and they only share about 5% of them, I was told. The rest, the teams get to process how they wish. And they track how quickly a quarterback throws the ball after the snap, the release of the football after the snap. They track it. And Jameis has always been, in his 3 years that they've been doing the data, 3 years, he's been at the low end of the scale, meaning he takes among the longest to throw the football. Now, a lot of that is Dirk Cutter's offense, which is similar to Arians' offense and deeper drops and things like that.
Puts a little bit more of a burden on the pass blockers.
It's just the number. You know, it's just the number. Now, so I'm like, okay, well, I expected Jameis to probably be down there. He's not known as a super quick release guy. Well, I looked at Carson Palmer 2016 offense, his number from Bruce Arians' offense, and Palmer's at the top of the league, very close to the top of the league. And Arians has always raved about how Palmer ran his offense. And then I just for kicks, I looked at 2017 Blaine Gabbert. He led the freaking NFL in passing the football, the speed of release in Arians' offense. So to me, logic says Jameis has to speed up his game to play in Arians' offense. Does that make any sense to you at all?
What you didn't mention is Blaine Gabbert couldn't complete a ball with Lee DeKemper pass rushing against him. But he got it out quick. It's interesting. Is it a coincidence that two quarterbacks that played under Bruce Arians were at top of the charts in terms of getting the ball out? To me, Tom Brady's the master. Brady's the master. Breeze is damn good. But Brady, you know, that's why you can't sack the guy. And Breeze, too.
Who was the best, Marino?
Maybe Marino. So what does this mean in terms of Jameis Winston? Well, if Jameis Winston was a rookie, I'd say Winston'd be in trouble. Those two guys were veterans. Palmer was a salty veteran, had already been with the Bengals, done well.
Salty veteran.
And I believe Steve said it was 2016. That was his fourth year with Arians. So that helps also in to understand what the guy wants. I'm going to bet that it's not a coincidence and that Arians is going to lean on Winston. And he's got a long release, Lee. We've talked about that. Mm-hmm. And who's teaching him? The master of the long release, Byron Leftwich. Boy, you talk about long releases. Something's got to change.
Had a quicker release.
something's got to change in that regard. Steve, good research on your part. I don't know what the second and the splits were on Jameis' numbers, but I believe it's going to go up substantially. Otherwise, Bruce Arians is going to be a very unhappy man.
Well, to that point, Ira, does this add up that Clyde Christensen told Albert Breer of the MMQB that he has to work on Jameis' fundamentals?
Yes.
Is that part of it,
you
think?
Footwork, fundamentals, get the ball out. Maybe that means the backs will play a bigger role, with those safety valve passes. It's not there. Boom, get that ball out. That could help Peyton Barber, and it could, and it's a big if. If Ronald Jones can get his act together, especially catching the ball, where he's starting from square one.
Yeah.
He really doesn't seem to have any rudiments of pass catching, and he didn't get to do a lot of it at Southern Cal. It's not all his fault. But he showed no inclination. When he caught a ball in the bubble this year during OTAs, I think the fans gave him a standing ovation over there. Lee, it was a little 5-yard pass. He knew he wasn't going to get hit.
Now, what we all know, Jameis is a workaholic. We know that. I mean, with Josh Freeman, that was a smokescreen the Bucks put out. We found out that was baloney. Jameis is not baloney. Christensen comes out and tells Breer Jameis has to work on his fundamentals. What was he doing the last 4 years? Or was Bajakian screwing him up? I don't know. I mean, I think that raises a question.
I don't want to take Steve without taking a pot shot at Bajakian. I think it's fair to point out he's no longer in the National Football League. He's back in the college ranks.
And you know who else isn't in the National Football League, which is to me is no coincidence. I have to verify it. Wrote about this the other day. The Buccaneers running back coach, the guy who developed this elite unit, Tim Spencer, doesn't have a job. I mean, there's a lot of guys like that from the Buccaneers situation.
Is Bajakian in Illinois? Where is he?
I forget which college. He took an offensive coordinator job, I believe, Boston College.
Oh, yeah, Boston College.
He's a new offensive coordinator.
Boston College.
All right. Now, Zach, your thoughts on Jameis's release and any of this stuff? I mean, we need a young, fresh perspective. We're talking about 0.4 seconds is basically what we're talking about here. Does this resonate with you?
Do you think he's got a long windup, Zach, you've seen?
We saw Gabbert's windup at practice. That thing is like a full-on circle. It looks a little bit like Leftwich, if you ask me, but he still, in 2017, led the league in getting the pass out quick, getting the ball out quickly.
That means so he knew where he was going with the ball. Yeah,
he knew where he was going with the ball. So I have to think that Jameis should, realistically, you might think, be able to do the same, because it feels like Gabbert's got a longer one, if not as long, but...
I've got a Gabbert question for you. And some fans listening, this just blows my mind, so I'm not getting off the Bucks here, but it's about Gabbert. Did you hear recently Jack Del Rio did an interview with somebody? He claims he wasn't even in the building when the Jags drafted Beck Gabbert, that he didn't know about it. He said, I quote, "I was filling my plate." He went out to eat. "I was filling my plate." So he had to be at a buffet. Golden Corral, possibly? and he was out.
That is exhibit A of a dysfunctional organization.
There you have it. Why? Because they couldn't give him a sandwich? They couldn't go to Jimmy John's?
He wanted the chocolate fountain over at Golden Corral.
Yeah, he had to go to Golden Corral to get food.
I went back to listen to it. I'm pretty sure, and I'll set the stage for you, Ira, because look, obviously you didn't hear it. I believe he had gone to another room in the building where they were feeding everybody during the draft. And so he didn't leave. He basically just went to get food. Okay, we don't pick for another 15 spots or whatever it is, and we're not trading up, and I'm going to go get some food. Well, next thing you know, they trade up. Blaine Gabbert's taken, and he's standing there holding the plate.
He's looking at the TV.
Yeah.
That is the moment that you realize I'm probably not long for this job.
And that's what he said. He said, that's how I knew that I'm on short notice here with this job. And, of course, who did he hand Blaine Gabbert to, at that time was the youngest starter, day one starter in the history of the NFL, Dirk Cutter. And Cutter, you know, they all knew that he wasn't ready, but they had to play him anyway. What a mess. I wanted to mention on Gabbert, just to give you the final stat line, he did make 5 starts with Arians that year. And I think he won 2 games as well.
I think he did.
And that was his first year in Arians' offense. So, like Jameis, he's coming in. Brand new offense.
He's only got 5 games of experience. In Arians' offense.
But when he came to Arizona, it was his first year, and he was best in the league at getting rid of the football. It's an interesting number. I don't know. Somewhere is the answer, and I think Lee's got a point that's on the money with that. The fundamentals, it's just,
You know what I think it suggests, Lee, in the case of Gabbert and Palmer and the quarterback whisperer? Arians as the third link in this chain, a quick processing mind. You know what your options are, your progressions, and you process it very quickly. Winston's got to get better in that regard, and that will help him get the ball out.
Now, Ira, we have a big announcement right after this. The Made to Move sales event is on right now at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard. 2019 Cadillac XT5, the beautiful crossover, $259 lease per month, a 39-month lease. All the details are at EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. And, of course, at Ed Morse, more than 1.2 million satisfied customers across the great state of Florida from the Ed Morse family of dealerships, and that includes Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Most 2019 Cadillac models, 0% APR for 72 months, plus $1,000 purchase allowance. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. All right, Sage, we're back, and I say it's a big announcement because I just got the official word. We knew this was cooking for a while, and we'll have more details next week. But Ira, it is official. You and your podcast have forged an exciting relationship with Buffalo Wild Wings. Big reason that we're here today at the location in Trinity. And you will be at all of the road games and a special England game event at Buffalo Wild Wings, greeting fans, giving away gifts, and you'll be moving around town all the different Buffalo Wild Wings locations, which is pretty cool. The details are going to be fun. And Sage on the move this season, eating and embracing the fans.
Is that Isbitz's way of telling me he ain't sending me to London? Is that how he does it? Right there. You go to Wild Wings, all right? You go to Temple Terrace. You could be going to Tottenham.
No Buckingham Palace for you.
With a schedule, what, like 6 games in a row, too?
But you know what? I'm going to sample everything on this darn menu, and it's a big menu. And you know me, Lee. You've seen me in action. I don't mind gabbing with the fans.
No.
You know that.
So it's fair to say bye-bye diet?
No, I'm going to put it on hold. one day a week, you know, you cheat a little bit, naked wings, loaded wings, whatever. And wherever you guys are, and I'm going to go from all different locations.
Yeah, you'll be moving around. We'll have the schedule later this month that we'll put out there, and it's very exciting. So you'll be in Trinity, you'll be in St. Pete.
And we want the volume turned up. We want to know what Rondé is saying about Carlton Davis, you know, playing 10 yards off, and, you know, we want the volume up.
So Ira comes to the people.
I come to the people.
Yeah, very exciting. We thank Buffalo Wild Wings. I can't wait to roll out all the info. And Sage on the move. This
I can't
is, this
wear
is
the
fun.
Same shirt every week, Zach. I got to expand my wardrobe a little bit.
Listen to him. Now he's panhandling for shirts.
I gave you a very nice shirt today.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, Sage. And, of course, as you know, this is not a huge surprise to you, and it puts more money in your paycheck, so you love that so much.
Now, wait a minute. That London game, I'm going to be at Buffalo Wild Wings at 9:30 in the morning, Lee? Is that what he's trying to tell
You'll
me?
You'll be compensated.
Yeah, special breakfast menu.
Special breakfast menu.
Special breakfast menu.
He's got it covered.
Yeah, it's all laid out, so we're very excited.
Bangers and mash? Is that what we're calling this thing?
People might be banging the table if the Bucks are 2-4 by then, but all right. We don't want to think about that. Now,
looking forward to it, Steve.
Zach, you got a couple of questions for the Sage?
I do. Well, obviously you got your cheat day coming up, but how's the diet going, first of all? We need a progress report.
Well, Lee, I don't want you to fall off this chair laughing, but you know what I like to weigh myself at home? After I come back from the tennis court. 2 pounds of sweat taken off me, and then, you know, by the next day, I add 3 pounds. 2 come off, I add 3. But it's going very well, Zach. I started at a certain number. We won't discuss it, Lee. And I believe I'm down about 7 at 2 weeks into the diet. So here we go. Now I'm
not
looking at
shabby.
The salad over here. And as you mentioned, I got bread staring me in the face over here. It's going very well.
Going very well. That's awesome. Moving to the Bucks. O.J. Howard hasn't had a full season yet. A couple of injury bugs. But if he is to have a healthy season, fully healthy, and he breaks out the way a lot of people expect him to, what does that do for Cameron Brate in your mind? What happens with him?
Brate becomes a red zone specialist, probably. You know, Godwin's not going anywhere. Of course, they got Evans. Howard's going to be on the field all the time. If he stays healthy, he's a 1,000-yard receiver. And by the way, Evans had 1,500 last year, and that's Whit Humphreys catching all those balls. Howard's a 1,000-yard receiver, and Godwin's like a 900 to an 1,100 receiver. That's potent. Now, what does it mean for Brate? First thing it means is a lot of fans saying he's overpaid. That's what it's going to mean, because he's not going to catch 60 balls with O.J. Howard healthy. I still think, Lee, and you've said it before, I still think he can be valuable. I still think he can catch his Brate. I still think he can catch his 6 touchdown passes. He knows how to get open in tight quarters, and he rarely drops the football. So you could argue if he's overpaid or not overpaid, but what I don't think you should argue is if they go 9-7, Cameron Brate's going to have a role on that team. I would keep him, and I think the more Arians sees him, if he's healthy and comes off the hip and surgery, I think the more Arians sees him, Zach, the more he's going to like him.
All right.
He wants reliable players. That's going on Cameron Brate's football tombstone. He was reliable.
All right, Sage, there's your wisdom for the day. Zach, we
appreciate it.
Lee wrote this up. Jenna Lane of ESPN had reported that her sources are telling her that the Buccaneers coaches, the coaching staff, not the fans, the Buccaneers coaching staff is not happy with the development of Alex Kappa. What does this mean? Do you believe it? And, you know, how is that even assessed when there are no pads on?
It could be a planted story, Lee, in an effort that Capo would read it and maybe his work ethic. Maybe it goes to his work ethic. Maybe like the Hargraves situation. You know, get it out there. Make sure Hargraves sees it. Make sure Kappa sees it. And then see how the guy reacts. Lee, if Kappa doesn't win this right guard job, shame on him. Shame on him. You know who wants him to win that job? Jason freaking Light wants him to win that job.
Okay.
You know, now you could argue, is he a guard? Is he a tackle? I've been saying he's a tackle. All right, they want to keep him in the guard competition. That's fine. But he's got the Earl of Watford. There it is again. Lidke, you know, we're not going up against Carl Nixon his prime over here. You know what I'm saying? So, do I believe it? No, I really don't, Lee, because other than work ethic, what could you really tell about Alex Kappa if you're a new coach, never saw him play in a game, and you're going by underwear football? It doesn't make sense to me, Lee, except that he's not working hard enough. That could be. So I think that's where their mindset is.
Lee, do you buy it?
Yeah. And I'll base it on this. Kappa had every opportunity. I mean, it was an absolute open door for him to see more playing time at right guard last year, because Benenluck was just unspeakably bad. And there was if Kappa had shown an ounce of ability in practice, they probably would have put him out there. Well, there was nothing to lose.
He started all 16 games, Benenluck, Lee.
Yeah.
I believe. All 16.
And Kappa played 6 games last year. None of these, all off the bench. So that tells me right there, he was showing, you know, the basically coaches didn't trust to put him out there.
Now, Steve, I got to be careful how I word this, because we don't want to come off as wise guys, even though we are sometimes. But, Steve.
Funny how.
You know that I'm right about this, but in the 2-3 years we've been doing these podcasts, we have centered on some people. Like, this guy's playing out of position. The Bucks went, you know, they total disagree. They stick with their feet in the ground. No, this is it. Marpet's going to be a center, this and that. I'm not sure I'm wrong about Kappa. I'm not sure he's not going to end up being the right tackle instead of DeMar Dotson in 2020. Let's hope Dotson stays healthy in 2019. Steve, it's happened before. They have mischaracterized MJ Stewart, I believe, might be another example. Drafted him as a corner.
Ryan Smith, Caleb Benenock.
You know, it's a pattern here. Lee, saying we're smarter than Buck coaches. Of course not. But, you know, our instincts, sometimes we hit the mark.
Well, the offensive line's been shaky as far as this guy playing in what position for too long now.
And, so Zach, you weren't with us, you know, in the last couple of years, but when they moved Marpet to center, said Marpet's natural position's a center, and Light said, I said it when we drafted him. Eventually, he's going to be our center. And Steve and I and Lee said, what are you doing? He's a pretty good right guard. What are you doing? And then next thing you know, after 1 year at center, they get Jensen and they make him the highest paid center in the league. And they move Marpet back to guard.
All right, Sage.
Lee, am I making anything up?
No.
Sage, stick to the watermelon on July 4th. Good luck in the batting cages with the Yankees. And we'll see you on your social media extravaganza.
There's no legitimacy to any suggestions that I used to follow players into showers.